Talk Show.
Recorded live.
This show contains mature content. Listener discretion is advised. One New York City Puerto Rican decided to start a radio show determined to piss the world off. By shoving a mirror within society's face, he kicks them in the balls.
Right in the nuts.
I present to you Louis
B. That's me.
This is the Crotch Shot Radio Show.
Indeed.
Welcome to the Crotch Shot Radio Show, where we kick the issues in the balls. We are on an active war on bullshit. We would do anything we can to expose bullshit. The ends sometimes justify the means. So if you're angry and want the truth exposed, then strap in and prepare to be shocked. This is Smash Mouth Talk. If you can't accept it, then fuck off. I'm your host, Louis B. I don't hold my tongue or censor myself or back down. I attack the issues that I don't agree with, and I drag them into the light. I would do anything and everything that to expose anything that is corrupt. And you know what? Even if I'm wrong, I would freely admit that I'm wrong. I am not afraid. Oh, just got a text message. Oh crap! I thought I hit the player to get audio, and this came up. Yeah, no, that's the text. That's the instant message feature. We got instant message. If you want to message me, I got a text box, and that was the first one, so it works. Anyways, before we get started, we're doing news and commentary. I got someone calling in. Barbara wants to talk about the court system. So I'm gonna get her on because it's a kind of an issue that I want to learn about, and it seems interesting. So I figured, hey, let's all get an edumacation. You know what I mean? So anyway, before we get started, we have the pimp's prayer because we be smacking all these beers niches. Alright, I really gotta keep this in a place where I can find it. Oh, here it is.
Let us pray the pimp's prayer. Lord, please pray for the soul of this bitch and guide my pimp hand and make it strong, Lord, so that she might learn a whole place. Amen.
Amen. And that goes out to the New World Order and anyone that supports her. The New World Order is a biznitch. So anyways, we got Barbara on the line. Barbara, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. You sound as if you're doing fine.
And you know, you gotta, you know, if you don't have a little piss and vinegar in you, life's not worth living.
Absolutely. I believe you gotta have fire in that belly.
Exactly. So, you were in the chat room and you wanted to talk about, let me scroll up here. The abolition of judicial immunity and court reform. What do you mean by that?
Okay, I'm a retired lawyer. Actually, I was disbarred because I challenged the court and they wanted my ass big time.
Oh.
So I moved from Massachusetts to Costa Rica, where I'm calling you from now. And I wrote a book. It got published a month after I got down here, thank goodness. So I was safe. And it's called Behind the Black Robes. That's plural. Mm-hmm. Black robes that judges wear. Has a subtitle of Failed, F-A-I-L-E-D, Justice. What I was, really, was an advocate for men's rights in court, because they get screwed big time.
Oh, exactly. You are now my hero. Are you single?
I'm old.
You're what?
Old. I am 75 years old.
I love older women.
I have been accused of being a cougar, so watch out.
Oh, hey.
funny. At any rate, I wrote the book, and it basically shows the tricks and the traps for people who are in court who have to defend themselves, who no longer can afford lawyers because the prices are too high, or they've already been cleaned out by a few lawyers. Are cleaned out with some of the sanctions they've been ordered to pay their wives, attorney fees. I mean, they say they have to pay child support, say if there are kids involved. But that's not all they have to pay. Sometimes some of the guys have to pay for super.
For what?
A guardian ad litem. Some places they call them law masters. It depends what state they're in.
Right.
Law. they changed the name. In Massachusetts, it's guardian ad litem. And a few other places. I think Florida uses guardian ad litem, too. But I think law masters are what they're known as in New York, for instance. And they have to pay often the attorney's fees for their wife as well as their own. They can't afford one lawyer, never mind two. Then they have to pay sometimes, well, naturally they have the medical stuff, you know, whatever isn't covered. Some of them get, of course, also have to do the college thing. And they have, they make, a lot of the people have to take psychological tests, which are just junk science. But the guys still have to fork out $1,500 for the tests that are meaningless, you know. Mm. And so the costs are incredible. And then if the guy can't afford to pay his child support after he's paid everything else, he goes to jail. They say it's debtor's prison, but we had a revolution a few hundred years ago to get rid of that.
Exactly.
You know? So, I mean, it really is a huge problem. I got into trouble in Massachusetts because I was already old and I ran for governor and said, oh, the hell with this. You know, there's no due process. No restraining orders. I mean, some men do too, but primarily women get restraining orders ex parte. In other words, without the guy even being there, without even knowing there's a hearing, he's ordered to get out of the house. He can't see his kids. He can't pick up his tools or his truck or whatever is still in the house. He can't pick up his financial information. All of that. And if he goes,
He gets arrested. Why is it so? Why is the law so in favor of protecting women and screwing over men? I mean, doesn't the feminist movement push for equal rights for everyone, though?
It began that way. At my age, I began in the feminist movement in the early 70s.
Okay.
Because I'm 75 now, so you take off 40 years, I was 30-something. At that time, we did. We just wanted equal pay for equal work. That's all we wanted. That's all I wanted. Because I had kids. That's all I wanted. But then the feminist movement began to take more and more legs.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out, Barbara.
Oh, okay. Is it better now?
Okay, you're calling from Skype, correct?
On Skype, yeah.
Okay, this is what you want to do. There should be a next to like the call. There's a pull down menu, right there where you call in the window where you're calling me from. Do you see audio settings? If it says automatically adjust my volume and speaker, uncheck it. Uncheck it and move everything to the loudest setting. That should do it. And then you click apply or okay, and you should be fine. Yeah. In fact, while you're doing that, let me this is Barbara C. Johnson. You can actually buy her book on Amazon. In fact, here's her biography right here. Barbara Johnson was born in Boston, Massachusetts in 1934. She grew up in Newton, a suburb of Boston known at the time for its fine public schools. After attending Binghamton College in Vermont for 2 years, she attended Middlebury College Russian Summer School immediately thereafter for her junior year. And when the male-female ratio was 50-1, she enrolled in Massachusetts Institute of Technology and a Center of International Relations, currently secretly run by the CIA. Wow.
I didn't know it until after. They had me translating Russian-Chinese treaties.
Wow. So you were a CIA asset and you didn't even know it.
Right.
Yeah, you're still coming in a little low. Check your volume settings, the microphone volume settings on your
put it all the way, I'll put it up high. I just did. Okay,
There
we go. Okay, good. Okay. Can you hear me clear now?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear.
Terrific. Thanks.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, definitely pick up her book. It's Behind the Black Robes. Again, on Amazon, you can pick it up for $24. That's not bad.
You can also buy it from Kindle for $9.99.
Yep, I see it right there. If you have a Kindle reader, you know, just you guys can pick it up. So,
Louis, you don't even need the reader. You can download it straight to your computer for $9.99. So you don't even need to buy their little game thing there.
And that's cool. Yes.
It is. The only disadvantage to a Kindle doing it that way is that you can't take it in bed with you and read it. You have to be in front of your computer. I suppose unless you have a small laptop.
those new iPads.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So my question is, because I've actually been covering stuff like this before. Why do men get screwed in this judicial system?
Because of the federal statutes. They're called Title 4D, sub D, and Title 4E. But Title 4D, that was put in, the original law was back in the 70s when Walter Mondale was running for senator. That was called CAPTA, Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act. Then fast forward to around 1990, and Joe Biden, who is now our vice president, that was his baby. That was his baby for all the restraining order stuff, okay? And you got Violence Against Women Act and all of that. When Clinton came in, he really helped put that together in 1994. And that's when they started. Now, what the federal statute says to each state, if you meet these quotas, it's a quota system. If you meet these quotas, we'll send you a bonus this year. Like in the early 2000s, Massachusetts got $147 million. God knows what it is now. California, I think, is up almost to $1 billion. They get from the federal government. So it's the annual bonuses, and they keep stats. They send them in. It's Muskie, Ed Muskie's school, which is part of University of Southern Maine in Orono, Maine, who's supposed to audit, but they do a lousy job. They haven't done anything. And so each state, some states are a lot worse than others, but the big states, I mean, they really is. We're talking billions of dollars to issue the restraining orders and put men in jail. Their numbers when they go to court. That's why the judges don't listen.
Yeah, I mean, there also seems to be a double standard when it comes to this. Because let's say in the case of a divorce, in New York, I don't know if you heard about this, they already passed a no-fault law here in New York, which means more divorce. I mean, the no-fault divorce is like a stimulus for divorce attorneys.
You betcha. Because I got divorced in New York, believe it or not, in 1965. I've been single for that long since. And I'd messed around in my life, but I never bothered to remarry. I know, cha-cha. Even hoes get old sometimes. I'm not. I happen to be professional. But still, I too now am an old person. But in my youth, whatever. At any rate, in New York, when I got married, a divorce in New York was only heard in criminal court. Only in criminal court. So it's only now, recently in New York, that it's gone no fault. So it's taken them that many years to get to that point. But other states have had no fault a lot longer.
Right, like California, where divorce is a sport over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, people, I've had people come, I remember them coming to my office. They've been married 6 months. What the hell is this? They weren't even trying. That, I mean, I brought a case in Superior Court, outside family court, on breach of the marital contract. Because the woman wanted the divorce. The man really was crazy about her. And I said, when she filed for divorce, I said, what happened to that part of the contract that said, till death do us part? You know, we actually won that case. That man was very happy. But the world has changed totally.
Yeah. I mean, you hear horror stories of, like, let's say a wife cheats on her husband. Not only does the man get the worst end of the deal, she still gets half his stuff, no matter what.
Right, and I have one case where she left, she got pregnant by another man, okay, he gave birth to the child. The divorce wasn't even final, because she moved to the state of Maine, and Maine had repealed the law for adultery, and had repealed the law for bigamy. So there, and Massachusetts didn't give a damn. So she got divorced after she had the child, and she finally, she got married before the divorce was final, so she really was a bigamist. We had proof. And it was interesting, and you're right, when she wanted money, this was the hot one. This is, you'll get a laugh out of
it. Yeah.
In court, she actually tried to get money from my client for the time she took for maternity leave. And it wasn't his
Wait,
kid.
Wait, what?
It wasn't even his kid. It was someone else's kid. So we said, well, in Massachusetts, if a woman gives birth to a child while she's married, the father, whether he is the real bio father or not, doesn't matter. He is responsible for the child support of that child. So I came up in court, and I said, in that case, we will add a count that he wants custody of your new baby. Boy, she dropped that quickly.
Yes.
I mean, because it was insane. The law was insane. The law still is insane.
It is.
Her request was insane. And
I
the
mean,
thing
you,
is, if I hadn't been aggressive, she just might have gotten away with it. That's what's scary.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like this is a legal form of extortion.
Absolutely.
I mean, it still amazes me when I read cases like this on how women are able to get away with this.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, not all women. Before I get jumped, not all women. There are shady ones, and I really understand why many men are joining the marriage strike.
Oh yeah, fewer and fewer of them are bothering getting married. There's no sense, because at least if you're not married, they won't get your property, something you've worked for 10, 15, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, you know? I mean, it's, you know, I would understand a man losing half his stuff if he cheated.
Right.
But, I mean, but it's not against the law to cheat on your spouse anymore.
No, not in some states. In Maine, it isn't. No, you can't even sue it. They call them, there's a name for it, but you cannot sue for an interference affection, you know, for the, you can't, those harm, heart bomb, H-E-A-R-T, like heart, bomb, B-A-L-M, like you'd put on a horse for a sore leg, heart bomb cases, and you can't sue for those anymore. It's rare to, I mean, there are 50 states, and I don't know the law in all 50 states, but I certainly know that there's many states in which you cannot sue for an alienation of affection. And that you can't sue the other guy who's screwing your wife.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, and it really doesn't pay, again, like you said, it doesn't pay to get married, because it seems like the man is taking all the risk. even if, and it seems like even if the woman is making all the money or most of the money, you know, they're not going to award the husband any spousal support or anything like that. They just expect him to go to work.
Right, and even if he has almost 50% of the time of the kids, for instance, she should be giving him some child support. They never, never seem to enforce a woman's failure to pay child support, even, as you say, when she's making more money than he ever made.
Yeah.
And some of them are, because you see lots of women lawyers, lots of women doctors, lots of women accountants. I mean, it used to be bad for women, and it's still in some cases bad, but there are many places where they do, and they become executives. Look at the woman in California who just won out there, the one who'd been some executive with HP or something, Hewlett-Packard, I forget her name.
Okay, but hold up. Yeah, HP, executive.
Hewlett-Packard computer company.
Divorce?
No, she just won some big office out in California. I forget her name. It doesn't matter. There are many women who've made it big in business also. They're not the majority of the executives of major corporations, but they're making the inroads, you know, and they get divorced too, along with the other women. The women are getting creamed by the so-called child protection agencies, which do anything but protect children. They'll go after the poor woman, the woman who can't afford a lawyer, and they take the kids from the woman's house because they're going to adopt them out, and then they'll get the state will get federal money, and they'll get $40,000 a year, $90,000, you know, if they adopt the kid out within a year. And so women are losing their kids, and they're really getting creamed. They don't get due process. They just come in and take the kids, that's it, and then go fight City Hall. It's terrible, and a lot of pain and suffering goes on there. So it's the men in divorce and the women in the child protection, the Department of Revenues and the CPS, child protection, whatever, DSS, Department of Social Services, DCF, Department of Children and Family, all of them, every state has its own three initials.
Mm-hmm.
But it's those agencies that really cream the women. Occasionally you'll see a man, but because the women, for the most part, have the kids, have the custody, the physical custody of the kids, they're the ones who get really stomped on by those agencies.
The only time a woman will get messed over is if she has no money.
Oh, no, not the only time, but more likely.
Okay.
Yes, more likely.
Okay.
Right.
What are the scenarios? What kind of woman has the advantage when it comes to divorce and child support? And I mean, what kind of woman gets to keep her kids in a divorce?
In the divorce, well, over 90% of the divorces, the women end up with custody. So that really cuts across all women.
So what prevents the state from stealing those kids?
Because they usually, they get money. See, the child support is another area. Because where the father is paying child support, every time they enforce child support, they get a piece of the action also. So they're already making money. In other words, they have lots of cash registers, the state does. You know, one for adoption money, one for restraining orders, one for child support. They're different. The statutes are large. In the book, I have some of them in the end of the book. I put some of them. But I call them all out so people will know where to look for them. And they're lengthy. They're long. That's why I didn't put them all in, because they really are huge. But it says right in there, it gives you the formula for how much money the states will get. People can see it if they go up to the Department of Justice, then go to the BNA or BNS, Bureau of something, but it's there. You just click away. Go up to, for the restraining orders, they can go up to OVW, which is the Office of Violence Against Women, and that oversees VAWA, which is terrible, VAWA, Violence Against Women Act. And they can see all the money for every year, for every state that the federal government gives. Those, that's the motive. That's the motive. That, those statutes are the driving force, and you can see by reading them who are going to be the victims. The men in one, the women in the other. You know, they set it up, and it's online. It's online. I mean, it's not hidden, but people don't know to look at it. But they don't really expect it. This used to be. We used to think we had justice in the states, and so they don't expect it, and they don't think to look there. But it's there, and so the women who get their child support, that every time that is allowed, and they did those in the 70s. Each state has to draw up guidelines for child support, and they review them every 4 years or so, and they have to be approved by the federal government. But there's a lot of stuff that goes on when they review those guidelines. Massachusetts is terrible. And they get money from the federal government according to those guidelines. And then if they don't pay, they're held in contempt. And then they go to jail, so there's more money for the state for enforcing that. And all these little ways, almost every way you think of, there is money from the federal government. And that's the big motive. We're talking billions. It's a multi-billion dollar industry.
I hope you don't take this in the wrong way, but are you sure it's just money? Because if it's just, I mean, just for the pursuit of money seems a little bit incomplete. I mean, it seems too simple.
Well, is New York broke?
Actually, I mean, a lot of times they do lie about how much money they really have.
Right. And California needs money. Massachusetts needs money. Just go down the line of the number of states who every year cry that they don't have enough money for this group. They cut out the firemen. They cut out back on the policemen. They cut out back on the social workers. They cut out, you know, they always have excuses that they don't have enough money. So money is the big motivator. I mean, it's from the federal government.
Are you sure it's not something more sinister, like trying to destroy families? I mean, because, I mean, look at how these laws have affected men and women. I mean, men don't want to get married anymore. They, you know, me included. I'm just out there dating for that one reason and that one reason only. And women are just after the next guy that will pay their bills.
Right. There's no question that the consequences of all of this is destroying of families. I call it the American Holocaust. The Holocaust of the American family. In fact, I used to be on Lawyers Weekly, which is a big weekly newspaper in different areas of the states. I think they have 14 editions, something like that, lawyers used to get. And I used to write on the blog and so forth and so on, called a forum. And then they told me that my stuff was interesting, but it was too provocative. And yeah.
That's usually what they call the truth.
Right, exactly. That's what it was. And so they won my ass big time. I mean, that message got across. But I was too old, and I saw it falling apart in front of me. I just couldn't stay silent. You know, that was my downfall. I could not stay silent. I'm still not silent, as you can tell, because it was so outrageous. Because I have grandkids. I don't see them very often. Now they're grown up. But still, the world that they're going to have to live in is not the world that I would have liked to have seen them grow up in, where courts have some meaning. You go to court, you don't want chaos in the streets. You want order. You want things judged fairly and impartially. You want a jury when you're entitled to a jury trial.
Right.
And they're not going to have that. That's not going to be around. They're getting fewer and fewer. You know, they're more likely to get a jury if they commit murder. I mean, then they have all kinds of rights. The criminals actually have more rights than the average guy who finds himself in trouble after getting married or having kids.
Yeah. I mean, where did this whole... if you could explain this to me, because there are a lot of reports or cases where... in the middle, when a woman decides that she wants to divorce a man, what she would do is put in a false abuse claim. Like she'll call the police saying that he hit, that there was a fight and nothing really happened, but the man would have to just leave
right.
the premises or else he
right.
gets arrested.
Right. I had in around 88 or 89, I had maybe... oh, I'm going to say a half a dozen women who entered, who came to my office. They had been referred to me, and they wanted no-fault divorces. And I said, well, do you have any property disputes? Do you have any children? Well, if he goes for children, I'll accuse him. And I said to the guy who was referring them to me, I said, Stan, what the hell is this? I don't want to, I mean, you know, don't send me any more of these people. And I stopped handling women's cases because I knew... they were making these false allegations up so that they could get custody, they could get child support, and so forth. They could get the property, they could get to stay in the house till the kid graduated, was emancipated, or was through with college. And that meant 18 if they were emancipated or through with college up to the age of 23 in Massachusetts. I mean, even
wow.
even if a guy and a mother are still married, they're not forced to pay the kid's college fees. The kid might have to go for some loans, might have to help work his way through college, you know. So the guy who gets divorced is really hit much harder than the guy who stays married because the law is very unfairly enforced. Now that happened in 88, 89. By 98, another 10 years later, because I was practicing, I put up my website called False Allegations, false, the opposite of true, F-A-L-S-E, and Allegations, plural, A-L-L-E-G-A-T-I-O-N-S, .com. That's still up there. It's 2010, 12 years later, it's still up there. And I put everything, it's a huge website, nothing costs any money on it, and there, I put lots of pleadings. Number one, an alphabetical list of everything that they have to know if they're falsely accused. And then I put a lot of my federal pleadings. If a guy, you know, we got not guilty, then you have a malicious prosecution case. And I put cases up like that, defamation, things that I actually filed in federal court for the most part. Because a lot of the domestic violence cases, you can't really, you know, there's privacy, you can't put too much up. But I put all of those up there. It's a huge, huge website. But it's all in HTML, so people can download the stuff, and they can erase and they can edit it. You know, you can't with a PDF file, but you can with an HTML file. So their facts are going to be different than the facts, say, in a case that I had. But they can insert their own facts, take out the facts that don't apply. But that's there, and that I know has been... that's got a few thousand people that go there every day. And they take anywhere between almost 400 megabytes to maybe 450, 475 megabytes every day they download from. Still, 12 years later. I mean,
wow.
People... yeah.
Where can people find that again?
FalseAllegations.com.
FalseAllegations.com.
Right.
All right. I want to get into something like personal. You said earlier you were disbarred, but you were put in jail.
Right. Right. I had up there, I was interviewed when I got out one time by the Hillman Show on WAAF, which is out of Boston, runs across the state. Yeah, each time civil contempt, not criminal contempt, civil. The first time was in 1998, and that my ex-husband of all people told one of my sons, get her the hell out of there. So he paid $2,500 roughly as a ransom to get me out because there was nothing I had done. It was a non-existing order, but I kept on challenging the court, and I would try to act like Clarence Darrow, you know, give him some real reason, constitutional reason why he should do this and not do that. And he didn't want any constitutional lectures, he told me. So he actually found me in contempt of not obeying a non-existent order. And I finally proved that because they tried producing years later, and it was years later. They finally sent me a copy of this order. I said, what the hell is that? It's up on my website. I copied it. In the old days, the old scanners, when you scan something in, my old scanner anyway that I had, would scan in every picture huge. I had never knew that it was possible. And I saw this one day, and I said, what the hell is that? And I saw that they had tried to modify it with hand, but the tail of the law, you know, like a Y or a G, those letters where it goes below the line, and they were left in the middle of the typing. So they had tried to, I put it all up on my website. It's hard to describe. They can go and see it, what I meant, because that's when I learned about it. But I was put in jail for not obeying. Actually, that's what they said I was put in jail for not obeying a court order. The court order was non-existent. Really, it's a little complicated, probably a little too complicated for a radio show. But really, I had answered a question that the judge said in court. I began saying, I wanted to tell him, no, Your Honor, that's the wrong pile of paper. That's all. He wanted me to give something to the other counsel. And I started my statement with, no, Your Honor, you know, it's the wrong pile of paper. I never got beyond, no, Your Honor, where he said, lock her up. That's really the real reason I was put in jail the first time. And there never was an order saying for me to pay any money. So my son had to go to court. It took him a whole day. They had to write up some order. And they finally decided I had to pay $2,500. But there never was such an order. That was the first time. But now, jump fast forward to 2006 when a single justice disbarred me. And I challenged him. And I said what they were doing. I didn't care. I was already old. And I said I didn't care about the disbarment so much. But I felt that my not being able to finish the cases I had was a disadvantage to my clients. They wanted me to sign off of those cases. And I said, but you're leaving them without the attorney of their choice. And the cases are good. We're winning them. So you're interfering with their right to have their cases heard. And because I'm controversial, there will be no lawyers that will want to take over those cases. And so that was really unconstitutional because my clients didn't do anything wrong. So it's because I challenged that and would not sign my withdrawal because I said my obligation was to the clients first and then the court. So when I did that, he said, he found me in contempt then of his order to withdraw from those few cases. And I ended up in jail 5 days. There so happened to have been 5 human angels who got me stuff that the judge wanted me to get in jail, which would have been impossible for me to get because you're given a steel slab and there's a stainless steel toilet in there. And that's it. No table, no chair, no lamp, no pen, no paper. I couldn't do anything for him. He wanted information that would have been on my computer, but I didn't have my computer in jail. I literally had a steel slab to sleep on. That's it. That's all I had. And I wasn't let out of there except for maybe an hour a day into a little room. It was with that had regular couches and stuff. But so I was in for 5 days. That's what you're, I think, seeing on my website, because there was a webcast by the Hillman Show when I was interviewed. I'd been on their show many, many times, and it was a funny webcast, and they saved it. And I've saved it since. And I think that's what you're looking at. But
right.
if those people hadn't come to my defense, I could still be in jail today. Because there was
wow.
no way I could do what the judge wanted me to do from jail.
And for an order that didn't exist, so they wanted to arrest you for a crime, for something that they didn't even order you to do.
Right. That's exactly what happened in 98. Exactly.
Wow.
I know. And then in 2001, I sued four judges. Okay? And I knew they had immunity, but I figured if I can get one statement out of them, I might be able to crack open the door. So I did it. And then, coincidentally, really not connecting the two, in early 2002, I had said to someone, oh, I heard who was running for governor. It was Mitt Romney, who's running for president now. Mitt Romney and someone by the name of Shannon O'Brien. And I said, oh, hell bells, I should run for governor. And the next thing I knew, friends were telling everybody I was running for governor. I ended up running for governor to get media attention to the cause. I ran on a platform of court reform and the abolishment of judicial immunity. And 3 weeks after the election is when I got a call from the bar saying that I would be petitioned for disbarment.
Yeah. Who was your campaign manager?
Me. I didn't really have a campaign manager.
Oh. Okay, because I'm on your site barbforgovernor.com and BJ for governor doesn't sound well.
I know Barb for governor BJ. Someone made this stuff and John Zanaki, who ran for auditor with me, he set that site up and it's still. He's kept it alive all these years. It's 2010, it's 8 years later. But he said, people keep on going to it. So he's kept it alive. And the little logo was made by another friend who sent it as a gift. I mean, you were talking. I didn't have money. I'd been doing a lot of work pro bono, free stuff. So I didn't have heavy money. So it was really, really on a shoestring budget, you know. You know.
Right. Have you thought about getting back on the bar? Or once you're kicked out, you're kicked out.
Well, I could. I think there's something that says you could ask for reinstatement. I haven't bothered. I just said the hell with it, and I came down here last July. I came down here, and it's lovely down here. Today is raining. It's rainy season, but lovely down here. The people are terrific. And I don't think without money, I can't really live in Massachusetts anyway. Costs too much.
So what made you go to Costa Rica to live?
Well, I heard it was nice and cheap. But it's not as cheap as I heard. Because there are a lot of expats down here.
Yeah, I heard about that. I heard Rush Limbaugh was going to move to Costa Rica.
Oh, right. I mean, it's there are a lot of expats here from the States, many from Canada. They're from all over. There are miscellaneous ones from other countries, too, but lots from Canada, almost as many from Canada as there are from the States. And they have a very big computer industry here, so a lot of the big companies, computer companies, do have facilities here. So there is an extensive area, suburbs of the capital, that are pretty pricey because of the number of American executives or you know, highly paid computer people and so forth and so on. And so those things are fairly lush. And prostitution is legal here. They don't like pimps, but they don't mind prostitution. So they have casinos, and they have beaches and surfing and all kinds of stuff. I happen not a beach person. Number one, I'm old, and I really hate heat. Where I am, it's 68 at night and 70 something during the day. It's very livable. Very lovely. So
speaking about prostitutes, have you partook of any?
At 75? No.
Why not?
No, not my thing. I wrote the book. I'm doing two others. I'm actually on a consulting case for four Native Americans. They're Sioux Indians. They're from the Nakota or Dakota tribes in South Dakota. And they've been in. They were convicted of child molestation. 1994, and they've been sitting in jail, various federal prisons, since then. And I just finished the trial, and I'm probably going to write a novel, something like Truman Capote wrote a book, In Cold Blood, which told the story of murders in the Midwest somewhere.
Right.
Then there was McDonald, some army officer who killed his wife and three kids, at least he was convicted of it, and they wrote a book. I'm probably going to do something like that. And I'll call it, you know, the Wounded Knee Massacre Resurrected, something like that, you know.
So what are these, I mean, if you don't mind giving us a preview of what are these two books about, what are they going to cover? I mean, you know, of course, don't give too much detail,
Yeah, the two books I think you're talking about are not the novel, because that's a new thing that's come up from some consulting I'm doing. But the other two books are actually for people who are representing themselves in court. One is how to cross-examine a guardian ad litem or a law master. You know, because people don't know what questions to ask, and they screw up. So it really, I have the actual transcript from a trial I did, and I had the guardian ad litem on for almost 3 days, 2.5 days. I really blew her away. And so they've got to learn the things they can ask. They can take the book right in with them to court and ask their, or just write out their questions ahead of time. That really and I've left the stuff in there. So if the other side objected and I argued with the court, I left the arguments in there so they know what they can argue if it gets to that point. Then the other one is when they're in a divorce, there's usually property. And they bring in someone they call a real estate expert. They're usually not experts at all. But how to cross-examine them, because they really mess up. But that was a very successful case, and I thought that those transcripts would be handy for someone to have, because they would know the type of question they can indeed ask, even though they don't have their own lawyer. And so those two books, I've got them half done. I've just I tend to exaggerate, but I'm going to say a dozen people ask me every week, what do I do here? What do I do there? So I keep on getting all kinds of interruptions, and I really, you know, it's taken away from my time that I have to finish those books. But I'll get them done. Each of them is about half done. When I get bored with one, I move to the other one and back and forth and so forth. But now I have this new thing with these four Indian guys, and oh my God, they were screwed big time. Really big, big, big time. And I have all their files on several CDs, and some people have sent down packages of paper. It's just huge. And I thought, they're not going to get another appeal. They've had too many. They've gotten nowhere. Their first appeals court actually vacated their conviction and sent it back to remand, but they got back to the same judge they had, who was a prejudiced bastard, and he never gave them the new trial the appeals court wanted them to have. So they've been appealing since. But at some point, the court, it's so many years now, the court's just going to ignore it. So I said, the only way, you need media attention. And the only way you're going to get media attention is to write about a book about this. And I do have that ability. My first professional job was as an editor for books. So I do know how to write, and which is helpful. And so I said, we'll get maybe attention if the book is good, but it's got to have sex, sizzle, and scandal. Without sex, sizzle, and the sizzle on that steak and scandal, you're not going to sell any book big time, you know? So that's what I'm doing now. I've got it pretty much organized. I have to make up my mind on the prologue and in the ending, a few miscellaneous things. But, and I'll try to do it up. It'll take me a while because there's a lot to cover. But someone said to use Avatar, and I saw that for the first time yesterday. Someone had sent me a disc. I don't even remember who sent it. I remember saying thank you, but I don't remember to whom. And so I watched it yesterday, last night, early evening, and that was a hell of a picture. Have you seen Avatar?
No, because I've been hearing that there's so much liberal nonsense to it. I really, if I'm going to watch a movie, I'm going to watch a movie. I don't want to have to be taught politics up in it, especially wrong politics.
Yeah, well, this is, it was interesting from, I wasn't paying attention to it so much, to the content, as much as the theatrics and the plot. The outlines of all the subplots, because that's important when you're writing a novel. That's what Grisham does and Clancy, all those people. I want a page turner. So your chapters are short, 5 to 10 pages long, and you have to end with some suspense. Like, you're too young to know, but when I was young, there used to be every Saturday, there would be a serial in the local movie, and Tom Mix and his horse. Every Saturday, one Saturday they would fall off a cliff. The next Saturday they would run through a burning barn trying to get someone. And the following Saturday they were alive. They didn't die when they fell off the cliff. Or they didn't die when they rode through the burning barn. So they would leave it with a point of suspense. And every chapter, and a good chapter that's a page turner, it's going to end with suspense. You're going to start with location, describe where it all takes place, give the person some emotion or thought, think a little bit, you know. Then they're going to take an action, and you're going to end it with suspense. Then on to your next chapter. You look at some of the old books. Oh, take a look at Sue Grafton. Have you ever read the Sue Grafton mysteries, A for Alibi, B for Burglary?
I've never heard of Sue Grafton.
Ah, no. Oh, she makes a fortune. At any rate, the protagonist in it is a female private investigator. And, you know, I've read so many of them recently, I said, oh, I can't take another Sue Grafton book. Because she's up to, I think, S or T now, you know, in the alphabet, so she's written that many. And they're really too much alike, and they really are written by formula. She'll actually pick out some from an earlier book and put it in the later book. But that's all by formula. And she uses that formula, lots of very short chapters, and it moves you right along. You know, I mean, you finish one in a night, you know. And so people, that formula works for a page turner, you know. It's good. Nelson DeMille is good on that. Lots of people. At any rate, that's what I'm doing, but those are someday maybe I'll write a book on how to write a novel, how to, you know, what the formula is,
right,
what things for a page turner. But that's when I get old. I'm only 75 now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, don't sell yourself short because you're 75. I mean, you had to make it there, so you must know something.
Yeah, well, I have energy. To me, I'm not religious, I'm not any of those things, and I smoke. I'm overweight, although I have lost some weight, which is good. To me, I think it's all in the mind. You know, there are people who are hypochondriacs. They think they're sick every minute. They run to doctors. I'm not that way. Have good salads, fresh fruit, fresh vegetables. You know, have a cigarette if you want with your coffee. That's what I do anyway. Too many cigarettes, but fewer than I had when I was in the States. But it's really a frame of mind. If you believe you're well and think you're well, and I happen not to be a drinker, not because I'm against it, just that I don't like the taste of it. I like a glass of wine. I never drink alone because I get too melancholy. But so I don't have liver problems, and I'm not a druggy person, so I don't have any of those miscellaneous problems, you know. So clearly I'm not about to get Alzheimer's, you know, because I'm thinking too much, and that keeps you from getting those, you know, senior moments. So I'll probably last. How long, I have no idea. You know, years ago, I used to think someone was going to take me out. But I never really worried about it. You know, I just chucked. And when I got to 30, I said, okay, I made it. Then when I got to 40, okay, I made it. When I got to 50, okay, I made it. Now I'm 75. I really don't give a damn, you know. It's just, you know, it's funny. I never expected to get this far. I never expected to last so long. I'm sort of surprised that I did, or that I have. But, yeah, I have energy. And I have friends down here. People are very friendly. All kinds of people.
That's going to be quote of the day. I'm 75 and I don't give a damn.
Right. Right. And, people... I don't know, they're around, they call, they email, they call on Skype. I have a number that people can call Massachusetts, and it's forwarded here to Costa Rica free of charge for me and for them. And so people think of nothing to call me. I've received calls from Australia on a regular basis, Israel, Germany, Poland, Hawaii. I mean, it doesn't matter. They just call, you know, hi, Barb. Because everybody knows me. So many people know me, you know, and I speak to them, you know. So, and then they do even here. Last night I had a long call from a guy in the north of Costa Rica. Costa Rica's small. It's only about the size of West Virginia. But he's an executive for the major beer company here. And he's much younger, but he calls me. I'm sort of like his private Ann Landers. He's got a new girlfriend. And he went through a divorce and so forth. Well, not a divorce. He wasn't married, but he had an out-of-wedlock kid. But he calls frequently. And, I mean, people just call. They just call. I make friends, and they call. You know. So life is good. I mean, I have a lot to be happy about. I truly do. I'm broke all the time, but I really do have a lot. Not everything is money. Not everything is money. It's friends. Hard to find good friends. Hard to find people who are loyal. That kind of thing. And if you keep your head straight, you'll stay healthy. You don't have to worry about the other stuff. You know, I never answer anything about cancer because they have plenty of money. They should have found the cure by now. It's a money-making business. And I don't want to get depressed, so I won't read the stuff. But I won't get it either. Because if I smoke, why haven't I gotten it? I don't know. Because I refuse to.
You refuse? Oh, yep. It's all in the mind.
All in the mind. Right. And I won't speak to people who always say no. You know, people who are so pessimistic and depressed all the time, not interested. You know, they always say, oh, no, that can't happen. Oh,
yeah,
no.
We got a question from the chat room. In fact, we're almost out of time. Can anyone ever get a fair trial? Judge and prosecutor are on the same side. And doesn't the state pay the judge and the prosecutor? Isn't that a conflict of interest?
Well, the judiciary is the third branch of government. That's the judicial branch. So naturally, their paycheck does indeed come from the state cash register. And the prosecutor is part of the executive branch of government. But they, too, will get paid from the state because they're in that branch of government. You know, not the same branch as the judiciary, but they certainly are state employees.
Okay, and someone else brings up a very good point. What about public defenders? They're paid by the state as well, so how can we trust them when they're getting paid by the same people that are trying to throw you in jail?
Good question. When I first began, I knew some. I did some appointed counsel, public defense work, and I fought them all. I got a lot of trial experience that time because I refused to plead anyone out as guilty if they, if I could believe and they claimed that they were not guilty. I said, what are you pleading guilty for if you're not? Just to get a better deal, it's going to haunt you. And it will haunt you. So I didn't. But I did meet lots of people who were paid, just like this caller has said, who they figure, well, they have a maximum that they can charge the state. And it's a low amount. So they're going to quickly end that case, have the guy plead out, and get paid, fill in his little bill to the state fast so he can get paid and meet his bills that week. But every once in a while, you would meet some really terrific public defenders. So you really have to research them. If someone is in the – here's the thing that they can do. If someone is in a situation where they're going to have to accept a public defender – go to court on a day that your case isn't called. Just sit there and listen to the public defenders. Go on a day where they're hearing criminal cases and go on a day to listen to what the public defenders say in court, whether they're good, whether they're bad, whether they're thorough, whether they're careless, and so forth. Go also on a day where some of them are going to have a trial. See how they do a trial. See whether they're successful. And ask around, get chummy with one of the counter clerks. Mm-hmm. You know, find out who's good, who's bad. They'll know. If asking, you know, if your kid was facing, say, an OUI, a driving under the influence charge, who would you tell your kid to have as a lawyer? Or if your kid can't afford a lawyer, which public defender would you want him to get? You know, you want to get friendly and ask these kinds of questions because they do vary. That person is 100% correct. They're not being bribed, the public defenders, but they're hungry. I mean, when I was doing that 20 years ago, they were paid, I think, I'm trying to remember now, maybe $25 an hour, which wasn't much, you know. Might have even been at 15. I don't remember. It's a long time ago. Like some places between 15 and 20. I think you got 35 if you were on a murder an hour. But think of what the lawyers charge an hour nowadays.
$300.
Right. So you tend to find people who get their caseload from being appointed. So that means they're hungry money-wise. So
yeah, I mean, I'm on payscale.com. A public defendant gets paid anywhere between $40,000 to $57,000 a year.
Okay.
That's peanuts.
Right, right. It's less than any computer software programmer gets.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So they're hungry. So they want to finish that case fast and dirty, and the only way they're going to get paid is when they finish it. So they have the guy plead out to something he didn't do. So you've got to really do what I say. Watch the courts. Ask those questions. Try to find out who's good and who's bad. Because it will vary. And it will vary from state to state as well.
Yeah, for 1 to 4 years of experience, a public defender is getting paid $20 to $31 an hour.
Right.
That's disgusting.
Right. That's why they're hungry. That's why they go for plea bargains.
Mm-hmm. So it's not in their best interest.
Right. They've got to meet their rent at the end of the month. Or they might have a child support payment due. Or they might have to pay their wife's attorney. You know? They have bills. They have their phone bill. They have to put gas in the car. So they need money. And obviously they don't have enough to be able to save it. So they're working from week to week.
Mm-hmm. Unless they get picked up by a firm. So, I mean, do most new defense attorneys cut their teeth on being a public defender at first just to gain experience?
Many do. I don't know that most do, but many do. I happen to because I wanted the trial experience. But when I was there, I remember meeting one woman who's now gets big, big money. At that time, she had worked for a big firm for 4 years, and I said to her, Linda, how come you were making, I said, you're here working, you're getting $18,000 a year as an assistant DA. What the hell are you doing here for $18,000 a year? She said, don't worry, when I leave next year, I'll get $118,000 because I'll have the trial experience. I didn't get any trial experience at that big firm. I was too low on the ladder, see? And she did. She did move on, and she did make that $118,000 the following year.
Mm-hmm.
Now she makes probably $400,000 and something.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Well, because it's years later, a few decades later. She got the trial experience, which she would not have had. Actually, you have to be careful on that, because when they come as an assistant DA, they really have experience in direct examination. They have very little experience on cross-examination because the defendants usually do not take the stand and they usually do not have witnesses. So there's most assistant DAs, our assistant U.S. attorneys, do not have experience cross-examining witnesses. They know how to prepare the cop and tell them the answers they want. They know how to prepare the social worker and tell the social worker what answers they want so that they never have really a hostile witness in front of them. They have all these friendly people who take orders, who will answer the way the DA wants the answers to be. So they don't really have to look very closely at the facts of the case, because many times they make them up as they go along. And so, particularly with these false allegation cases, those can be wild. I mean, I read 10 days of transcripts just this past week from that trial, and the kids who were being questioned, and they weren't questioned in court either because it was an old case, and the law was a little different, so they had them in closed-circuit television. But there wasn't one question that was asked of those children that wasn't a leading question, which basically was telling the kids the answer that they had to say. And the judge asked one of the kids, do you know the difference between the truth and a lie? And she said, yes. He said, well, what is the truth? And the kid said, I can go home again and see my mom. And what was a lie? I can't go home again and see my mom. So, you know, they've been bribed. They've been bought clothes and toys. They were poor kids. They were Indian, from an Indian reservation, which they really had nothing. And so they were bought all these things that they had never seen. They were bribed with toys and food and clothes. You know, adventures, visits to parks, and different kinds of, you know, amusement parks, places where they had not ever been able to get to because they didn't have cars, and they certainly couldn't afford an entrance fee. But they were bribed for whatever information the DA wanted. And this was by the therapist, the tribal therapist, who actually hated one of the guys in the tribe, I guess, for some other reason. And then the therapist, it went on. It's very interesting. It'll make a good book, very exciting, and it'll be fast-turning.
Well, Ms. Johnson, before I let you go, do you want to plug anything? Do you want to, any last words?
Just buy my book. I live on those royalties. I because my Social Security is only a little over $900 a month. So I do need, my rent is $700. So that gives me a little over $200 for food and for clothes and for aspirins and for whatever. So I could really use the royalties. But I really think the book will be helpful. My website's free of charge, so they don't have to worry about money on that. That's all open for them. So false allegations, they can go, don't have to worry about money. And the book, though, they can buy it cheap between $9.99 for Kindle or $23.99 for paper. But it should be helpful. They can look at the book reviews that have been written and see other people who've read it and whether they liked it. My book reviews are really good. I was very pleased at seeing them. But I think that Behind the Black Robes, Failed Justice, I think they will find it because they'll – I broke it up carefully into – the first half is really a lot of domestic stuff. And then I have a criminal section and an appellate section. I've broken it up so people can find their way around in it fairly well. They can look at it also. Amazon has something. They'll show the cover of the book and it says, look inside the book. They click on that. They can put questions, words in there that they want to see whether I've spoken about them. So they can get a look inside the book even though they're not in the bookstore, which is really good. You know, and that would be nice if they bought the book. That I'd love to see.
Alrighty. Again, that book is Behind the Black Robes, Failed Justice. I was honored to have Barbara C. Johnson on. Her website is falseallegations.com. Again, look for her book on Amazon. Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for calling in.
Oh, I'm Barb, and thank you, Lou, very, very much.
Okay.
If people call me Barbara, Barb, I answer to anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, Barbara, thank you for calling in.
And thank you for letting me talk all hour, my God. Very nice. Very nice of you. Very generous.
You are welcome to come anytime you like.
Oh, thanks. I will. I will listen in and see what you're doing. I always have an opinion about something.
Oh, okay. Very good. So,
okay.
Anyways, I'd like to thank everyone for listening. You can always subscribe to the show, iTunes, Zoom, Zencast. We're just subscribe for free. Check out the site every day. We're always updating it with news articles and stuff like that. Definitely check out the site. This has been the Crotch Out Radio Show saying, fuck the New World Order. And if you don't want to research, do your own research, do your own homework, and you just want to keep your head stuck in the sand and just make believe nothing is going on, there's nothing wrong with the world, then apparently there's nothing I can do for you. So I'm sorry, that would have to be fuck you too.